This is the Diet-Climate Connection, a special project from Humankind. I'm David Freudberg. Our use of oil, coal, and gas has been so extensive that it now accounts for all the observed global warming since 1900. And as these fossil fuel emissions have flowed into the environment, the effects can be calamitous. Dr. Jennifer Hurado serves as Chief Resilience Officer in Broward County, Florida, near Miami. She testified before the U.S. Senate Environment and Public Works Committee.
On April 12, 2023, a thunderstorm delivered an unprecedented 26 inches of rainfall in 12 hours, impacting much of our community. A 30-minute commute became a three-hour navigation of floodwaters. Flooded vehicles were abandoned en masse. Fuel distribution from Port Everglades was disrupted, affecting 12 counties and five international airports. Of course, extreme conditions are not limited to flooding. This year, Broward County experienced 37 days with a heat index over 105 degrees Fahrenheit compared to an average of 5 days per year historically. We know that extreme heat disproportionately impacts the underrepresented residents, outdoor workers, health-compromised individuals, our youth and elders, affecting finances, earnings, and physical health.
Young people growing up in these conditions face the unsettling prospect of a succession of extreme weather events attributable to climate change. Genesis Butler is a 17-year-old activist living with her parents in Long Beach, California, near Los Angeles. She wants to grow into adulthood on what she calls a thriving planet.
I'm very concerned about it, especially because I have younger siblings. I'm the oldest of five, so I have so many younger siblings, and I want them all to have a thriving planet to live on. So that's why I do all this work, because I want to make sure that I ensure that they have a thriving planet. And it takes a toll on my everyday life just thinking about it, and it makes me anxious knowing what's happening, especially on the news, seeing all the flooding that happens.
Genesis founded an organization called Youth Climate Save, which she says has 80 chapters in the U.S. and other countries. She started focusing on the climate crisis after she first learned about our food system.
Yeah, I was 6 when I first decided to go vegan because I was wondering about what I was eating. And I asked my mom, and she told me how it was chicken nuggets, and that really shocked me. So I was like, I do not want to eat this anymore. And then I ended up going vegan.
Why did you not want to eat chicken nuggets?
Well, I've always loved animals. I didn't have any animals around me growing up, but just seeing them on TV and seeing their personalities, I knew that I loved them. And when she told me how we were eating them, it shocked me, and I was devastated, so I told her that I didn't want to eat it anymore.
What produced such an intense reaction in you?
Well, just knowing how, like, they have emotions and how, like, just seeing how they were, because my favorite show growing up was, like, animal shows, so I knew how they were, and I knew how, like, they loved their babies, they loved their families, so I was thinking, well, why would we kill them for food when there's other things that we can eat?
At age 10, Genesis Butler gave a TED Talk on this theme. Apparently, she's persuasive. Genesis told me most of her family has now adopted her diet.
Well, at first, for, like, my parents, that was a bit of an adjustment for them, just because they didn't know what I could eat. They didn't know why it was important to go vegan. They were like, okay, well, now what? My mom's Mexican, and so I'm mixed. I'm indigenous, and I'm Mexican, and I'm African-American. So then my mom started to think about the cultural foods that she was eating, and she didn't know if we would still be able to eat them. But then when I told, like, my grandparents that I was going vegan, we were able to veganize all of our cultural foods into a vegan version. So now on Christmas, I can still have tamales, I can still have beans and rice, I can still have tostadas, just all veganized.
As we've occasionally presented audio documentaries about diet and health, people sometimes ask if a plant-based diet can provide all the necessary nutrients. The answer is yes. A balanced vegetarian or vegan diet can be very beneficial for health and we now know it can be more eco-friendly. Physician Walter Willett at Harvard.
Of course, the meat and dairy industry have been very effective, very powerful in transmitting the need for their products for meat and dairy. If, for example, schools have very little budget for nutrition education, and so the dairy industry steps in and provides their nutrition education.
And the influence of these powerful lobbies has long had a formidable impact on American society.
American meat eating habits have not been constant for the last 250 years. People did not get off the Mayflower eating tenderloin steaks. It's a mistake to suppose that they did. And our meat eating habits have indeed changed.
Sidney Mintz was an anthropologist at Yale and later Johns Hopkins, renowned for his study of how society consumes food. He was interviewed in 1996, remembering his experiences in World War II.
I think, for instance, in my own case of being in the service from 1943 through part of 1946, we were given meat 21 times a week at every meal. And even on Friday night, there was meat to fall back upon if you didn't want to eat fish. And my memory of that is that I was, like most of my soldiers, a young man who had not eaten meat 21 times a week before I got into the service. I probably ate meat, at the most, 7 times a week. And I think we turned ourselves into much more a nation of meat eaters by that war than we had ever been before. We also, needless to add, turned us into a nation of cigarette smokers. We turned us into a nation of coffee drinkers and sugar users and so on and on. Because war is a wonderful time to discipline one's population to eating what you want them to eat.
Sunday night, the American Meat Institute, on behalf of all those engaged in supplying meat to the nation, presents The Life of Riley with William Bendix as Riley. The meat people of America providing a great food for a great nation. This year, your meatpacking industry will probably process about 90 million hogs, the greatest number in history. That's a lot of pork, America. But our fighting forces and our folks at home will need it all. And now, The Life of Riley.
I think that meat eating in the United States has always been enhanced by the feeling that it expressed our difference from other peoples, our masculinity, our vigor, our love of life, our newness. A lot of symbolic messages were carried along with the meat and still are. It goes along with the kind of hunting attitude Americans have, the right to bear arms. A lot of different things are attached to the notion of meat eating. And that said, it's striking, of course, to see how it is possible for people to do with less meat, for instance, under medical advice, and in fact to feel quite good about it, to find that it's possible to live with less meat or with no meat at all, for that matter. In other parts of the world, meat generally is not served in large portions, in big slices, in slabs, in whole roasts, in gammons of ham, in legs. What one gets instead is small pieces of meat, often mixed with either a vegetable or a starch, and consumed as a way of making the basic food more appetizing.
This is Wendell Niles, a spokesman for your meat industry. When Mother puts the pot roast on, there's a smile on her lips, and water in the mouth of everyone who likes honest Injun food and flavor. Be even gladder, pot roast people, for that lovely pot roast is packed with proteins. Not only proteins, but top-flight quality proteins. We can't see them, but our bodies sure need them to grow on, to keep in repair with, to keep fit on. In fact, all meat pot roast or pork chop, fresh, smoked, or canned, is a yardstick of protein food, because meat measures up to every protein need.
So the idea that consuming animal products is essential for human health was drummed in by advertising. It was also a message disseminated by government agencies starting in the 1940s and 50s.
This is Milton Cross bringing you another story of Empire County, presented by the New York State Department of Health and produced by the State Radio Bureau.
Billy insist on meat every night. That's why our bills are so high.
Well, you gotta have meat. Meat gives you protein. That builds up your body.
Sure it does. But meat isn't the only way to get protein. A pound of American cheese will give you as much protein as a pound and a half of meat and cost a lot less. Fish and eggs give you protein. So does poultry. So does milk.
But there's a broad range of protein-packed foods that don't rely on animal products and have a much lower environmental footprint. These include legumes like soy and lentils, a wide variety of nuts. Broccoli and leafy greens like spinach are also sources of protein. Again, longtime Harvard Nutrition Chair Walter Willett.
You certainly can be very healthy as a vegetarian, a lacto-ovo-vegetarian, or a strict vegan. If we are a strict vegan, we do need to pay attention not so much to protein usually, but to getting some essential B vitamins. So I think if someone is going to consume less than about 2 servings of animal sources of food per day, it's really critical to either use fortified foods or to take a multivitamin, multimineral. That costs about 8 cents a day. It's very safe and expensive. I think that's the easiest way to be sure that we're not short on B vitamins.
We're exploring how the foods we eat impact our warming planet. You're listening to Humankind. I'm David Freudberg. For more information about this segment, The Diet Climate Connection, and to obtain audio downloads or CDs, please visit humanmedia.org. You can also download our free booklet, The Climate Friendly Food Guide, with lots of useful information on this topic. It's all at humanmedia.org. I recently visited Tufts University in Medford, Massachusetts. Tufts operates America's only graduate school of nutrition. Some say the students there are especially climate conscious. I chatted with Olivia Calkins, a senior and a chemical engineering major. A few years ago, growing up in western Massachusetts, she shifted her diet away from eating meat.
I realized that I care about all animals equally, so why should I eat some? And between that and, like, obviously the impact on the environment, it was just a pretty natural decision for me.
Her friend Liam Reardon is also a chemical engineering major who's become vegan. He told me he was less concerned about animal welfare than about the increase in extreme weather events associated with climate change.
I think it's obviously one of the more visible ways in which it's kind of being expressed now, whereas previously it was kind of something we could ignore, and it was hard to, like, quantify the effects of global warming. When you're seeing, like, more frequent and stronger hurricanes and other weather events, it's a little bit harder to ignore. And I think that kind of that scariness and how it affects both kind of, like, large-scale communities and communities that are very visible and also communities that aren't very visible is definitely something that I think concerns me the most.
I guess I've always wanted to help the environment. I've wanted to do that since I was younger, and I kind of thought the only way I could make a tangible impact on the environment was through my job. So for the longest time, I've wanted to be in the environmental engineering field. But in high school, I kind of started to realize that I can do more things than just my career to help the planet, and that the food I was eating was actually one of the most, I guess, smallest changes I could make, but also one of the most impactful at the same time, because everyone eats food. That's something that connects us all, and the food that we eat is a very big contributor to a lot of these effects of climate change.
How about you, Liam? How did you decide to make these personal changes?
Yeah, so I've been a vegetarian for about 2 years now. I'm 21. And so about in the fall of my sophomore year, I think I kind of just decided to, like, try it out for a week, just to see kind of how it felt, just like on a personal level and, like, a health level.
See if any of your limbs fell off.
Exactly. To make sure it was like, I guess something I could do. And at first it was kind of like a challenge. I was like, okay, I can do this. And then a few months later, I started doing that kind of predominantly. So pretty much I would not eat meat except maybe once or twice a month. And then after a few months of that, in about the spring, I decided to just go full time.
It's hard to imagine any agricultural practice that doesn't have some environmental footprint, but that can be minimized by abstaining from animal-based foods.
I kind of thought about just like the things that I was having and just like the little like treat of having like meat every now and then, and realized that I didn't necessarily need that, and it would just be kind of easier just to go like 100% commit to it. Which I'm kind of glad I did. I mean, part of the reason that it was like helpful is I was friends with Livy at the time. And so I had someone that I knew that was like already kind of living this lifestyle. So it was easier to kind of do having someone who also was kind of on this path and like knew how to operate it and could support me, which I think was definitely very helpful.
And relying on a support system can be helpful in making many lifestyle changes, as is well established for people wishing to do more exercise or to overcome addiction.
One of our friends kind of has organized like a group chat, and there have been a few kind of events that we've had, like dinners where people will cook. Maybe two Saturdays ago, I hosted a potluck, which was very fun because me and my housemates who are not vegan or vegetarian at all, we got to try out some recipes that kind of we wanted to make. And so it was definitely like a good experience and kind of like affirming what we were doing and also kind of like spreading it out to a few other people, which was nice.
So did your housemates get affected by this gathering?
I mean, I don't necessarily know the long-term effects, but I think they definitely enjoyed it a lot. So I guess time will tell. It was nice to see, and like, it was nice to have like support in that sense.
So when my mom was in college, she went vegetarian for, I think it was mainly animal welfare based, but she, I think, lasted maybe a few months because at the time she didn't really have the resources to maintain a healthy diet. And I don't think she wasn't educated in the sense of how can she get the right food. So she was pretty much eating pasta every day. It just wasn't working out for her. So she went back to eating meat again. But when I ended up going vegan back in high school, I talked to my parents and I said, like, I've done all this research. I can show you and we can cook together and learn together. And both of my parents actually have since gone vegan, which, again, like, I'm very lucky to have that support at home, too, which I know a lot of people don't. But that's made things a lot easier for me.
And Liam?
Yeah, both my parents are definitely more conventional in kind of their eating habits. But it was definitely a little abrasive, at least with my dad, because kind of, you know, the classic, like, dad grilling things. So when he kind of, when I, like, told him about it and, like, he found out at first for maybe, like, a month, he was a little abrasive to the idea.
What did he say?
Well, he was just, like, he would ask me a bunch of questions just about, like, why I'm doing this, just to try to find the point, which I think he slowly kind of got onto. I think also because he's a really good chef, and I think at first he was kind of disappointed in kind of the fact that he couldn't make certain things for me anymore.
But a good chef can adapt.
Exactly, and I think he's definitely had a lot of fun nowadays and kind of when I'm home for the holidays or break, kind of making some things for me, which I really appreciate, and it feels very like nice and accepting to have.
Has your dad developed any great vegan dishes?
Yes, we have he made a really good, like a peanut tofu stir fry that I typically always ask for when I'm home, which is really great.
One aspect of global warming especially concerns these students, that vulnerable populations are impacted. When COVID-19 struck, outbreaks occurred among low-paid workers at meatpacking operations. Poor people may be affected by respiratory illnesses and climate-related food shortages. Olivia Calkins, whose mother is Korean.
Climate change doesn't affect everyone equally, and it kind of tends to be the lower-income people of color communities that are being hit the hardest to start. And I've noticed it's very easy for people to kind of shrug off climate change because it's not personally impacting them, but that is not the same for people across the world, across the country. So I think that aspect is very concerning to me.
Today's college-age youth face challenges from climate chaos unlike those of earlier generations. It poses an existential crisis with far-reaching implications both for disruption in our communities and the emotional well-being of these young people. Liam Reardon.
It's definitely easy at times to be a little bit nihilistic about it, especially when you're talking about like personal decisions.
What do you mean?
Like, in terms of, like, deciding to be a vegetarian or doing other practices that are kind of more environmentally friendly, it's a lot of thinking like, oh, what is this little thing going to impact when there are massive kind of conglomerates and oil companies and all kinds of manufacturers kind of emitting all these, like, carbon dioxide and methane emissions and, like, what are my personal choices? How can I even affect that? And once you kind of start thinking that way, then it kind of leads to the point of if I don't feel like I'm affecting things, then why do I even do this? And I think that's a destructive mindset to have. So I definitely think it's you have to recognize, and I try to recognize that the kind of direness of the issue, and that like these environmental things are extremely kind of concerning and things that we really need to tackle and throw as many resources as we can at it. But that's not like we should be hopeful that we can. And it's a balance between kind of feeling like there's no hope and feeling like, oh, someone's going to figure this out because it's not going to just fix itself. We definitely have to do it. And so I think trying to hold on to that and have a little bit of hope about it is important.
And what seems clear is that unless we intervene now, the conditions will get worse. Physician and nutritionist Walter Willett at Harvard.
We could stop climate change from getting worse if we just acted on the things that we know are possible to do. But doing so is, of course, a strongly political issue, and we have to have the will to take those steps.
So, when it comes to nutritional choices, what do you recommend for people to actually do that could have an impact on this unfolding catastrophe of climate change?
The most important thing is to consume a diet that is producing less greenhouse gas emissions. The number one villain is cattle, both for meat production especially, but also for dairy production.
Even these harmless, gentle cattle grazing in the field.
I grew up on a farm in Michigan, and it was a dairy farm. And that's been in our family for generations and generations. So I like cattle, but the number of cattle we have now is just far too large to be sustainable. That we can produce a modest amount of dairy and beef even sustainably, but we're way beyond that limit, especially in the United States.
My sense of human beings is that even if things look pretty bad, if we're doing something that, and with others, because we're such social creatures, that give us meaning, that is the good life.
Frances Moore LaPay, author of Diet for a Small Planet.
The destruction that we are causing is clear. And so I want to give my life the most meaning and to feel the most powerful I can feel while I'm still on this earth. And to join with friends in doing that and together doing that, that's the good life. So this is not, oh, would you please come carry the burden of saving the world? No, no, no. Welcome to greater meaning in your life and knowing that every choice we make and don't make ripples out. I don't know if what I can do is enough, but I know I'm doing what I can, and I'm going to be encouraging others. And who knows? We'll never know who's watching. When you're doing something that you know is for the good of all, you don't know how many people that you're affecting. So it's where self-interest and the greater interest are absolutely aligned. It's not a you should, but a we can. That's the slogan I have.
You're listening to Humankind. I'm David Freudberg. Studio recording by Antonio Oliart Rose. Editorial assistance from Kathy Graham, Ken Rogers, and Rowan Edwards. Webmaster Brian K. Johnson. Special thanks to the Union of Concerned Scientists for research support. Thanks also to Steve Martin, Laura Carlo, and Tony Buck. Our program is presented by Human Media.
To download an audio copy of this program and access other resources, please visit humanmedia.org. That's humanmedia.org. You can also access our other programs and send us an email from our website. Again, our web address is humanmedia.org.
And you can subscribe to our free weekly podcast, Humankind on Public Radio. You can also download our free booklet, The Climate Friendly Food Guide, with lots of useful information on this topic. It's all at humanmedia.org. This segment, the Diet Climate Connection, is Humankind program number 300.
The executive producer is David Freudberg. This is Humankind.